This is Marketplace Money from APM. Active or passive isn't the only question an investor has to decide. There are CDs, index funds, mutual funds, bond funds, muni bonds. It goes on and on. There's just so many investing choices. And it can leave a lot of us wondering if we should be investing at all. So for our entree into the world of portfolios, trading, and risk, we've asked Jill Schlesinger to be our navigator. She's a CBS News business analyst and an investment expert. Hey, Jill.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.
Thank you. So first off, do beginners really belong investing? Or are they just going to get crushed by the people who do this for a living?
First of all, the people who do it for a living, and I used to be one of those people because my first job on Wall Street was a trader, don't know that much more than you do.
Okay.
They just act like they do. But I think that before you start investing, you should try to familiarize yourself with the basic concept of putting your own money to work. Means you have to understand that there are all different types of things you can invest in, different
right.
asset classes, right? And so we break them down. Most people have heard of stocks and bonds mm-hmm. and cash, right? Cash is the easiest one to get, right? Ooh, I get that one. That's cool. The next one is a bond, which is basically an IOU. You lend money to some entity and they hang on to that money for a while and pay you interest along the way. And at the end of some term, they give you the money back.
Got it.
So you can lend that to a company, a municipality, hopefully not Detroit. And you can lend that to the government, the U.S. government. So that's the bond. You also have a stock or equities, and stock is just investing in a company that is publicly traded. So the thing about stocks and why they get people kind of nutty is that in a short period of time, they can be quite volatile. Over a longer period of time, they do tend to return more than cash or bonds. But at any given moment, like during the financial crisis, stocks can look pretty awful as
right.
an investment.
It'd be kind of a nightmare.
Right.
We have listeners like you on the line with questions about how to invest. Jill, are you ready for them?
I'm ready to rock.
All right. The first caller is Elizabeth. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, what's your question?
Well, I'm 29, and I have about $10,000 that I'd like to set aside for retirement. And so I was thinking of putting the money in something like an index fund. But I'm wondering, with the stock market so high right now, would it be smart to wait a little bit to see if it comes down or only put a portion of that money into an index fund?
Now, this is a question I have too, Jill. You don't want to be the guy who chases the top only to lose everything, right?
Oh, Elizabeth, if only I knew where the top and the bottom were, we would be so rich. We could figure it out together. The problem is that I just don't know whether the next leg is 10% higher or 10% lower. And I don't really think a lot of people know that, frankly. So one way that you can take a more measured approach is that you can do something called dollar cost averaging. And that would mean that of your $10,000, you set aside a certain amount or a percentage of that amount to go into an index fund on a periodic basis. So maybe you say for the next 10 months, I'll put $1,000 a month into an index fund.
Why do that, Jill? I'm going to stop you. Just talk us through, why does that make more sense than just tossing those $10,000 in today?
Well, it only makes sense if the stock market's going down.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's going down, but let's say the stock market is going down. Let's say Elizabeth is right. She's got a feeling that things are topping out. And a month from now, instead of the Dow being at 15.4, it's at 15. And so she's put $1,000 in. And the next month, she's putting $1,000 in at a lower level. And if we see a decline over the next 10 months, then Elizabeth will be buying shares at an average price that's lower overall, right? So if you put all of your money to work at once and the market then subsequently falls, then you're just stuck with that price. You put a little bit in every single month and the market goes down, you'll be better off. But here's the problem. If the market keeps going higher for the next 10 months, then you're putting $1,000 a month away for 10 months, and the market keeps marching higher. And you may, in fact, find that you would have been better off putting the $10,000 in as a lump sum. The academic research shows, just to be wonky on you, that when people put lump sums to work, it is usually more beneficial than dollar cost averaging, even if the market were to fall. The problem is, if you're the kind of person who's going to drive yourself crazy because you put your $10,000 in at the top and then the market goes down and then you're going to sell out, then just stick to dollar cost averaging. If you're the kind of person who says, I just want to get my money invested, I'm in it for the next 30 years, then do a lump sum.
Yeah, I mean, I plan on just putting it in and letting it sit there until I retire. So it sounds like putting it in as a lump sum might make more sense.
You know, you're really young, and if you're thinking about this for retirement, even if you put your money in today, and today is a near-term top, it will not be the top 30 years from now. That's the one thing I can guarantee you.
Great.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Jill, we're now going to Aaron from Richmond, Virginia. Aaron, hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. And Jill, to introduce you to Aaron, she's actually one of the most active Facebook friends Marketplace Money has. Aaron, how long have you been listening to the show?
Probably a year and a half. You know, me and my husband have a couple of income properties and, you know, just weren't really that financially literate, I guess, when we started out. And we just had a baby in November.
Congratulations.
So, thinking about him.
Well, thank you so much for listening and for commenting on our Facebook page. What's your question for Jill?
Well, I was actually watching a Frontline, and it was called The Retirement Game. And they mentioned the best thing to invest in was actually what the previous caller said was an index fund. And I was just wondering, how would one go about, I guess, putting money into an account like that? And, you know, to avoid fees, because I've just heard so many bad things about, you know, fees for those kinds of accounts.
That's a great question. The show is called actually The Retirement Gamble. So part of The Retirement Gamble was talking about how the shift in retirement over the last 30 years in America has really gone from a burden of employers to us, the employees. And so many of us first started investing, not because we were little Richie Riches, because we had these things called 401ks. Mm-hmm. And so the story in The Retirement Gamble gets, there's a very pointed exchange about index funds. And so what is an index fund? An index fund is a mutual fund that goes out and just replicates one of the indices that's out there in the universe. So it's the S&P 500, 500 U.S. companies. It could be an index that represents the Russell 2000, small company stocks. And the beauty of an index fund is that it is a passive investment. So they just buy the stuff that's in the index, and the mutual fund leaves it alone. So you're not paying for research, and you're not paying someone to figure out to make the best trade or not. It's just the index. And as a result, the fees of an index fund are way lower than the average fee for a managed mutual fund. So we're talking maybe it's, I think I don't even know at this point, I think the S&P 500 index offered through Vanguard is now 0.07.
Okay.
Percent, like 0.07% cost annually, whereas the average managed mutual fund, I think as of last year, is maybe about 0.8% to 1%. So what's the advantage there? Well, think about it, Aaron. You're investing and you invest and you had a managed fund. You literally starting the year at -1%, right? Because that's the cost of the fund. Whereas with that index fund, you've got a big advantage. You've got that, you know, almost full percent that's in your pocket. And when you look at the performance of index funds versus the managed fund universe, it may be shocking to all the people in the mutual fund industry who love to talk about stock picking and how brilliant they are, but they don't beat the index. So I love index funds, and there's a lot of different places where you can buy an index fund. Some of the larger companies that offer index funds are Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price. Those are, yeah, and you can also buy them through brokerage accounts through Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade. But those mutual fund companies are offering lots of different kinds of funds. But I would suggest that you really stick to the index funds within there and within their fund offerings.
Okay.
And you could just put a little bit of money away every single month. You can have, I think for many of these funds, it's as little as $50, maybe $100 a month. Have them take it right out of your bank account. You do an auto draft and you're on your way.
Okay, great.
Now, how do you compare these costs, Jill? Where do you find these fee numbers to compare?
Well, you know, I'm sure that you've read your mutual fund prospectus when you've had some horrible bout of something. You're like, oh, I can't get to sleep.
I've memorized.
Yeah. They used to be printed on that little thin oniony paper.
Right,
by
in really tiny 6-point font.
Right. Sadistic lawyers create those. So now the easiest place is you actually can literally type in the name of the index fund. You can say Vanguard 500 Index. And there's a part of every single website that says fees.
Okay.
And you're going and looking at the fees, and you will see them compared to other index funds. I mean, one index fund, quite frankly, is no different than another, because they both, if they're the same index, right? So it may just be that you like the interface of the Vanguard platform better than the Fidelity platform, or it may be that you have your Fidelity 401k is, you know, is your employer plan and you want to use that. It's not that different. But I will say, really, that there's, as much as I have so many friends who are traders who try to tell me differently, and I keep saying to them, but there is no evidence. The evidence is really in the favor of index funds. So I don't know why I would ever tell anyone to drive themselves crazy and try to find the best managed fund.
Okay.
Erin, thank you again for calling and for participating on our Facebook page. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, Jill, now we're on to Statesville, North Carolina. Corrine, are you with us now?
I am here.
So tell us a little. I understand you have a question about retirement investments.
Yes, I do. And I do want to say that I have my daughter's 529s in index funds. So that made me very good to hear the end of that comment there. I am a teacher, so I'm eligible for 403B savings plans. And I've had them for a number of years. I had one fund for a number of years and just kind of felt that, I don't know why, just maybe thought it wasn't performing very well. So I switched over my investments to another firm. And I'm trying, I just don't know how to make sure that the money isn't going in the right place.
That's a great question. I have found, you know, in my previous life as a financial planner that 403B plans are very thorny. When they were first offered, in addition to pensions for employees, what would happen is that there was just going to be a company. You didn't have a choice to say, hey, here's company A, and this is what your choice is. And during the evolution of, you know, the industry, many more plans were offered. So the first thing is, the easiest way to compare it is to say, what is the cost of investing in each of these different plans? Generally speaking, I'm going to give myself a caveat here so I don't get bashed by all my insurance friends. Generally speaking, the plans offered through insurance companies, which are often variable annuities, are expensive. And so why are we doing this to our people, right? Why are we doing this to our employees? So the first thing you need to do, Corrine, is to talk to someone in your HR or benefits department and say, hey, what's up with this? Can we get a no-load choice? Can we get a cheaper choice for investing than these guys? Because this is not very good. If you're left with tough luck, lady, you get what you get, which is what many people are left with, then the way to look at it is to first, the first layer of fees that are charged are the plan fees. And by the way, you should be getting, I believe, at least once a year and probably quarterly, an outline of how much these plans cost. That was actually a new rule.
I have a statement sitting in front of me right now that for this quarter, it showed a certain amount of fees incurred, and I divided that into the value of my beginning balance, and it was 0.4%.
Right. And so, like, you know, can I say this in a nice way? Like, that's kind of like you're getting hosed, you know, because you're okay. You're now paying 1.6% a year. And if you think about, like, well, 1.6%, that doesn't sound so bad, except that many index funds are a tenth of 1%. So why should... You know, this is like, this is part of, you know, my frustration with the industry, which I love so much, but it makes me insane. Why are we saying to people that it's okay to pay an extra 1.5% a year? Why is that okay? It's not.
Okay.
And you want to be a rabble rouser? You say, hey, you know, don't you want a better plan? That's my favorite thing when I used to say to people, like, well, don't you, doesn't your boss want a better plan?
Right.
No, I want to do it for everybody. And if you can get a group of people together, it's actually very easy to add different parts of a 403. 3B plan now. It's much easier than it used to be.
So basically go to the human resources and find out what my choices are.
Absolutely.
And then if I don't like the choices, then try to find a different choice that they can then adopt.
Right. Just say, hey, why can't you guys just go slice a deal out with Fidelity or Vanguard and make that a choice? What's the big deal? It's no big deal for us. How about that?
That sounds good. I'll look into that.
Corrine, good luck with your HR department. I hope it goes well for you.
Thank you very much.
Jill, we are making excellent progress, I think, in our headway into understanding the basics of investing. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about bonds. We'll be right back.
Marketplace Money is supported by Allianz, serving more than 78 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. AllianzUSA.com. Get Marketplace any way you'd like every day, right here on your local public radio station and on Marketplace.org, Slacker, Swell, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes.
This is Marketplace Money from APM. Investment expert Jill Schlesinger is with us today answering your questions about investing. Jill, before we get back to the phones, I want to ask a question out of the news a little bit, which is about the bond market.
Yeah.
And that's this. My understanding is that as interest rates go up, bond funds are going to fall. So what do you do? What's it mean?
Well, I mean, interest rates have already gone up.
Right.
We've had a huge increase. If you think about it, we went from 1.6% the beginning of May in the 10-year Treasury yield, that's the intermediate term lending benchmark with Uncle Sam. So mm-hmm. you could lend Uncle Sam money for 10 years and get paid 1.6%. It's popped all the way up to 2.6%. 2.6 is still really low. It's just that that move within a short period of time is quite sudden.
Right.
Hasn't happened, by the way. The full percentage point move has not happened like that since 1994. So what do you do? Well, I'm not a fan of getting out of asset classes completely.
Okay.
So I'm not a fan of saying dump every single bond you own. However, I think that knowing that we are in a rising interest rate market, it's not going to happen immediately, there's a few things you can do to protect yourself. Number one, instead of using just government bonds, you can have a mix of bonds. You can have some corporate bonds that would help you out. You would want to keep your duration, which is basically how long you're lending money for, to the shorter side, you
okay.
know, so that you say instead of lending for 30 years, you say, oh, I'm going to lend for 5 years. And you might even keep a little bit of cash on hand because as interest rates rise and bond prices fall, you can buy some bonds at lower prices.
Right.
But all in all, don't blow out of bonds completely. And if you have a fixed account in your retirement account in fund, if you're looking at if you're a TIAA CREF investor and you've got the fixed account or a bond fund, you can use the fixed account and that will not fluctuate at all.
Great. So our last call today is from Ron in North Carolina. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Ron, it sounds like you've had quite a sort of up and down experience in the market in the last 10 or 15 years. So tell us your story. What's going on?
Well, I retired from an airline back in 2002. And the retirement fund that I had when I retired, I invested it into a brokerage account, 50% in stocks and 50% in bonds, and was devastated by the outcome of that. So I lost a considerable amount of my retirement fund that I was blessed with when I retired. In 2005, we moved over to a brokerage firm and invested through Goldman Sachs funds heavily in that particular environment. And before the big fallout in 2008 and 2009, prayerfully, we did look at everything and sold a great percentage of these funds, so we didn't lose everything. We lost a little bit, but not the total amount that would have been lost if we'd kept it in a little bit longer. Since that time, we've been with Vanguard and what we have basically done is invested in individual stocks, one of which was an airline stock, and we doubled our actual IRA through this one airline through several buys and sells at lows and highs.
Ron, you sound like an active investor, and I wonder how have your experiences been with fund managers?
Basically, what we felt like was the economy, as we all know, in 08 and 09 collapsed, but we felt like we had some bad advice, and we went with it because we were just new kids on the block, and we were just trusting these people to guide us in the right direction, and that was the main driving force why we went into managing these individual stocks for the last 3 or 4 years.
And Jill, I mean, how do you decide that you can have confidence in somebody when it's your money and when you have had these negative experiences in the past?
Well, I think that confidence and trust are very big, but I also think that there may be a point in your life where you have to recognize that maybe you aren't ready to do this for the rest of your life and you may be beyond your own abilities, or you got super lucky for this period of time and now you don't want to blow it again. You know, you can't be guaranteed. There's bad guys and gals out there that do stuff, but primarily it's an industry filled with people who actually want to help you. So I think that if you try to stick with people who are fee only or fee based, if you stick with people who are registered as investment advisors, and that means they have to put your needs before their needs or their company's needs, and you talk to a few different people and you get some feedback, that's something that's worthwhile for Ron and his wife, because of their bad experiences, they're going to have to really go slowly and try to, someone's going to have to work hard to win their trust. And I don't blame you, Ron. It's, you know, there's lots of bad things about the industry, but I do get the sense that you have been unbelievably fortunate, that you may have experience in this business, in the airline industry, and you got real lucky with this stock that maybe could have, you know, just, you know, done the opposite and hurt you. And I don't want you to give up the money that you've made. So right. I'd like to try to put a few insurance policies in place on that.
Exactly.
So, Ron, what do you think you're going to do?
I think that's good advice. You know, we're going to follow up on what, you know, what we're all about here today and look into some other investment advisors and go from there. But, you know, I think we definitely are open to things that would be less involvement for us and more of a balanced and kind of a continuity type plan that would hold us true and still give us some return for the next few years. So I'm open to that.
Well, Ron, good luck to you. Let us know how it turns out.
All right. I appreciate you.
Thanks for calling.
You bet. Bye-bye.
And Jill, before we let you go, President Obama is starting this campaign-style tour about the economy and the middle class. And one thing he's been talking about is retirement and saving for retirement. And I wonder, before I let you go, do you have any thoughts about what he ought to be saying, what you'd like to hear from him?
Oh, I have so many lists of things that I'd like to. I can't even put that in like a reasonable time frame. He should say that, you know, everyone can make a difference. He should say, go out and do good things in the world. I don't know. I think that one of the things that the president and many people in politics fall back on is this concept that if we just are all financially literate, everything will be better. And I think that's baloney. I think that plenty of people who are super smart and understand their finances make lots of dumb choices. And it's very emotional. It's just that, you know, presidents have too much, they get too much credit when the economy goes well, and they get too much blame when the economy goes poorly. And there's many things to say about that. But I would like the president to really stress that just, you know, figuring out how a bond works is not what the ultimate goal is. The ultimate goal is to create a disciplined approach to managing your financial life at the earliest possible age.
Jill Schlesinger is a CBS News business analyst and personal finance expert. A link to her blog, Jill on Money, is on our website, marketplacemoney.org. We're also taking your questions there and on our Facebook page for next week's show, all about debt and credit.